computer-driven video art systems. We'll be ending our talk just as we started with a pioneer in this field. Stephen Beck has been active in both the art and science of electronic video graphics since 1968, when he invented the Beck Direct Video Synthesizer, the first cameraless video instrument. In addition to describing some techniques of both analog and digital video synthesis, two short videotape compositions of his work will be screened during this presentation. Video Weavings is currently being broadcast over WDR, German television in Cologne and Munich. Union was recently awarded a Signy Gold Eagle and was selected for exhibition in the newly opened George Pompidou Museum of Modern Art in Paris, and will also be featured in part of an upcoming PBS TV production, Collisions, starring Lily Tomlin. Recent articles on video synthesis by Beck have been published in Video Art by Harcourt Brace and Open Circuits by the MIT Press, and are forthcoming in the Journal of the Society of Motion Picture Technical Engineers and Gametronics. Beck holds a degree in electrical engineering from the University of California, Berkeley. He's currently consulting on video integrated circuits and game software for the industry, as well as continuing to produce non-objective videotapes and films. Currently, he's organizing a series of seminars on digital video, hard and software, to be held at General Electronic Systems in Berkeley. And in the next few moments, he'll be with us, Stephen Beck.
Thank you, Larry, for that astounding opening. Good afternoon. Thank you for sticking around all day. I know that after a long day of talks, it can be very difficult to endure. But I hoped to not merely present technical and assorted type of information, but also I brought videotape examples of my work, which we'll be showing shortly. If I can have a second here to get these plates ready. Okay. I would like to divide the presentation here up into two basic sections. The first dealing with what I call algorithmic imagery and the work that I have been doing with purely digitally derived real-time moving color video imagery. The second half of the presentation, I would like to move on to what I call cosmological imagery, which is an assemblage and combination of a wide variety of techniques that I've been working with in the last 10 years. So, to get back to the beginning here, before I came over, I realized that as much as I've used the word computer and seeing that this is the computer fair, that if I were to ask any one of you to give me the definition of computer, you would probably say, well, it's a machine or something that does computations. But beyond that, I myself was curious as to the origin of the word computer, which a little research revealed was derived from the Latin word computar, which means to reckon with, which any of us who've worked with computers are fully familiar with in terms of the beasts. But in terms of imagery, and specifically graphic video graphics and the use of electronic tools to produce either still or moving imagery, the computers that I've had the opportunity to work with and build have been both analog and digital in nature. The work that I've been developing the last couple of years, which I call Video Weavings, is primarily based on a digital video processor, which I have developed. Perfect. Great. All right, we see here a basic block diagram of the system, which is primarily a standard microprocessor bus type architecture controlled system containing read-only memory, random access memory in fairly small quantity, 256 bytes, a cassette I.O. or mass memory input, and also a keyboard controller, and a special box, which is actually a video generator. Now, since video signals are in the frequency range of 4 to 8 or even higher megahertz, the speed requirements are far in excess of any of these of the existing processors. The necessity of generating the video information in other fashions is quite extensive. I would like to ask you that you not take photographs of the tapes or the plates. It wasn't explained to me that this was going to be permitted, and I would like to ask that you not do that. If you want further information on these things, feel free to contact me regarding it. A zoom up here in the of the video block looks something like this. We see that we have a coming off the data address and control buses at the bottom of the plate, a series of control decoders feeding up into actual video generating, processing, and colorizing blocks. Again, the necessity of generating video information at a 4 to 8 megahertz rate means that you have to have additional hardware to actually produce the video bit stream as compared to the hardware which is actually doing the computational and control processing. Now, the approach to the television raster might begin with an examination of two frames of video in looking at the behavior of the subcarrier frequency in terms of 1-0. You'll notice that the subcarrier frequency signal produces a line of small dots symbolized here by dashes across the line of the screen, and the phase of this pattern shifts from line to line and varying over two fields. Since the subcarrier, which is utilized as the color information carrier component in a television signal exists, it's a very convenient signal to utilize in base generation of video imagery. In addition to the image clock, a synchronizing signal, shown on this plate, is required. The top section A shows you the what the interlaced or standard broadcast television sync looks like, and below it on the lower portion of the picture is a view of the non-standard industrial type sync. Either one of these can be used for synchronizing and developing a video-based signal. However, if you're planning to do commercial broadcast work, it's imperative that you use the interlaced standard, which is obviously more elaborate and complex to generate compared to the non-interlaced, but which gives you positive interlace or locking of the picture onto each line on each field. If you don't have this, and a lot of the video generators around use non-standard sync, you actually suffer a loss of vertical resolution, as well as a overall randomness in line pairing, which generally reduces the resolution available in your picture. One of the questions that always comes up pertains to the resolution achievable in a television picture. Now, a good rule of thumb as far as a black and white or monochrome picture goes is about 80 line pairs per megahertz. However, in terms of color, let me move this over. There we go. In terms of color here, I just want to make a point here about the behavior of most color television sets in terms of recovering the color information. Because unfortunately, with a regular television set, you can't get very much resolution in the pure color channels. The reason for this is that in a television picture, the black and white, symbolized by Y, and the color, symbolized by C for chroma, are transmitted together in an interleaved fashion. Now, most television sets use as a recovery method a simple parallel LC bandpass filter to separate out the chroma energy, which is centered around 3.5 megahertz, from the black and white or luminance energy. Now, the implication of this is that the response of this filter to a infinite rise time pulse symbolizing infinite resolution picture will be one of these three types of overdamped, underdamped, or critically damped responses. For example, here I've shown a short video pulse and the response to it by several varieties of filters with different responses. And you can see that what you wind up getting is a kind of smearing effect, or alternately a peaking and deepening. In other words, you wind up getting a much reduced ability to sustain resolution in a color television set. Now, if you want to get beyond this kind of problem, you have to use color monitors or RGB type displays where you don't have these resolution problems. The system that I'm going to demonstrate here shortly in the video weavings has a resolution of 512 TV lines by 557 horizontal line spots per line. However, in terms of displaying on this video beam or most television sets, you really won't deliver that type of resolution. And you'll be much more practically limited to something on the order of 80 to 90 lines per megahertz, as the rule of thumb figure indicates. Now, I want to say a little bit here, after talking in the introduction here about some of the techniques and aspects of video technology, on the other aspect that concerns me as a video graphic artist. The original brochure here for this program described it as a computer-controlled video systems, which I would take serious objection to, and I think many of the people here who work with video and computer tools might agree that the computer is generally not really the controlling element so much as the element of realization. The artist or graphic designer must define completely for the computer the nature of the operations to perform. It must perform to generate a given image or a sequence of images. And I, for one, like to discourage the idea of computer-controlled art. To the same extent that one might say a painting is controlled by the brush, I think it doesn't make any sense to say the painting is controlled by the computer. And I have not personally, and I'd be delighted to be made aware of, much work at all done with true aesthetic algorithms in terms of computer generation of imagery. There's been a lot of work with algorithms dealing with image elements, image processing, painterly and drawing type of rules, but the general aesthetic or overall compositional structure has not yet been sufficiently defined, and in fact defies any sort of terminal definition within a algorithmic structure, such that my use of the computer in generating the video has been largely as a tool for realizing the imagery. Whereas the compositional ideas and motifs are derived from a completely different source. However, this is not to say that one of the areas that we might find developing in the future is compositional algorithms. Now, who's going to put this tape on for me? Thank you, Larry. By the way, I give Larry a hand here for having the wherewithal to organize this session here on computer-driven video processing systems. I think he's done a great job, even though his car did break down this morning. So, Larry, thank you. Okay, I'm going to... Okay, we're going to cut in here to the second section of a tape of mine called Video Weavings Edition 2, which was produced originally in 1974 with my prototype video weaver. And we're going to see about 5 minutes of the tape, which demonstrates real-time generated digital imagery using a color range of 4,096 colors. The program to operate this patternry, which is generated by a special video processor that I developed, which has an instruction set that is not mathematically or logically oriented as much as it is oriented to generating and processing bits of video imagery on a raster scan display. The control program for this tape, the section that we're going to see, only runs about 256 bytes. And it's a very efficient imaging technique. It can't really add or do any type of mathematical operations worth a darn, but in terms of processing, moving, and altering color video bits, it's quite a powerful process. So if we could have the lights fade out and have the tape rolled, we'll take a look here at this section from Video Weavings. Very good. Seal us off. Thank you.
out there? Hello? Lost your sound. Hello?
Ah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay. That was Video Weavings edition 2. The basic idea in the tape was to take very simple, no more than three-step algorithms and process the picture elements according to color in the algorithmic sequences that we saw, such that the combination of geometry and color were both under program control. The algorithms, as I say, were very straightforward and were, in some respects, in retrospect, the same algorithms that must have been applied by Navajo and Pueblo weavers in some of the blanketry that they developed. Obviously, the similarity is very definite, although this was not the purpose of the work, but I think it points out that historically, on technology of previous centuries, we found people working with the same kind of problems and issues, whether it was the Navajos and the Pueblos in their weaving and tapestry, the Islamics in their arabesques and geometries, the Hindus in their yantras, or even the early American women in their quilts, who, as far as the history of this country goes, were among the early pioneers in patternry and algorithmic imagery. So I think we'll find, obviously, many of the products that are around and available to the computer people can be used to work in this type of area, and it'll be interesting to see the ability to generate complex patterns in real time develop over the next few years. I'd like to move now into the other area of the talk and lead up to the showing of Union. Now, the problems confronting one in terms of generating and processing and producing imagery with video and or computer film is a problem that is twofold. Not only one must define a form, shape, or sequence or series of such shapes, but the computer or the output processor must be explicitly instructed on how to get from one point in the display to the next. Now, traditionally, because the computational times involved have been somewhat lengthy, we haven't really seen too much real-time generation of sophisticated imagery. However, the combination of speeding up the processor and its instruction cycle time combined with improved algorithms should open up a whole new area here of complex imagery that can be generated in real time. Now, one of the most familiar or well-liked imageries, classes of images that are used, tends to be somewhat circular in nature. Now, I wanted to present here very briefly a series of plates outlining the development of programs which can be used to develop this type of imagery. We see here a circular pattern plotted around an origin defined by XOYO and a small vectorial segment of the circle, DS, which is made up of components, Cartesian components, XY. Now, we have here a basic set of equations which tell us the behavior of this vector as it moves around the circle, and that in equation one, it can be simulated to an approximation by vectors dx and dy, which themselves are defined by equations two and three, and are functions of the angular increment and also the angular location of the point. Now, developing this a little further, from the standpoint of a computer and numerical processor, we can define not these vectors, but incremental moves, delta theta, delta x, and delta y, which in turn, delta theta is simply the number of angular divisions that we make of the circular space, 2 pi over n, and delta x is correspondingly the negative of the radius or distance from the origin times that incremental angle times the sine of the angle, whereas delta y is the radius times the angular increment times the cosine. Now, if we init our circle plotter to, say, location XO plus RO, which puts it out here, and we initialize our Y location to YO, which puts it here, and we initialize our angle and radius, we can begin plotting arc loop, which will basically define arc segments through the plotter. In other words, we go through a loop here, doing I through n a number of times, where we calculate the new x increment, delta x, and the new y increment, delta y, and we plot by simply repetitively adding to the current location, which is defined by simply x, y. Now, once we've moved the plot, we increment the angle, and then we have a number of choices as to how we are going to return to the beginning of the loop. If we simply increment the angle and return, we generate a basic circular pattern, such as shown here in A. On the other hand, if as we increment the angle, we also increment the radius. Oh. Thank you. We arrive at a spiralic form where the radius is both a function, is a function of the angle. Now, we can also take a loop back, which simply says that if we've completed a complete revolution of the circle, we increment the radius by a constant, which will generate a series of rings. Or we can define the radius function in a more complex fashion, such as being related to the cosine times some multiple of the angle theta, which, if m is a very large number, will give us a sort of radial pattern. If it's a somewhat fairly low-valued integer, will give us the so-called rosette patterns. Or in general, we can define r as any function of theta or any other variables, and in these fashions derive the basic set of imagery through our plotting routine. Now, the important point here is that the incrementals can be defined at any level which is convenient for your processor. They can be defined decimally or binarily. But the thing to remember, again, is not only must we define the form, but we must tell the computer plotting processor precisely how to move from one location to the next. Now, to make a move from that step to the ideas that will be presented in the following tape union, the work itself is primarily a unification of many techniques according to compositional algorithms, circular generators, video techniques, both analog, digital, process concrete imagery, such as the human form, are all combined in this tape. The tape deals more with relational elements rather than representational, stressing the inner and underlying qualities rather than the outer appearances. In this respect, I think, represents what personally I've been interested in, which is fusing the technological capabilities of computers and electronics with thought, philosophy, what have you. Which is not to say that the strictly mathematical imagery is without a substantive form. I cringe whenever it is referred to as decorative, though indeed decorative is a compliment in its own right, but I think the point to be well taken is that the those of us here who have worked with the computer and with mathematics understand full well that the underlying relationships and the elements embodied in these type of thing are very definite and very specific and can be a source of great stimulation and enlightenment, pleasure, turn off, whatever your own personal makeup might be. So to conclude my formal presentation here and make room for the panel, I'd like to screen my piece called Union, which runs for 9 minutes. So if we could have the lights again, I'll load this tape and proceed. Thank you very much. Great. Okay, I'll make room for the panel, and have a nice evening, everyone. Thank you.
As a research associate at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, the University of California in San Diego,